Welcome to the fourth episode of Your Time in the Run, the Hunted Series 7 podcast from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always is my fellow Brit, who we would always give points for effort, Anthony Williams.
Hello.
And the lady who always claims to be a homebody, so the authorities don't have an excuse to search her garden, Michelle Pierce-Denovan.
Hello.
There's some good news on the Hunted front. It won its time slot this week for the first time in the series.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
The ratings came out a couple of hours before we were recording this, and yes, it won its time slot, apparently.
What time is it on over there?
9 o'clock.
Oh, it's late.
So it's the first time in this series that it's actually won its time slot, which is positive news, hopefully, for another series, because I think there's a bit of ambiguity about whether another civilian series is going to happen, given how long this one took to air.
And they've not asked for contestants, have they?
They don't tend to until the end of the series on that, so it's not as bad a sign as it could be, but SAS Who Dares wins, which is very much of a similar ilk, has gone to celebrity only now, I think. So who knows? Hopefully it keeps winning its time slot and we get more civilian episodes. You had good weeks?
Yeah, very good week. Been a busy week. I've just come back 5 days back-to-back gigging. So nice to have a night off tonight.
One of which was 20 minutes from my house.
Yeah, apparently.
Saturday evening, I look at Ant's Facebook, I think it was, and he's like, oh, I'm gigging here tonight. And I'm like, you do realise that's literally round the corner from my house, right?
Oh my God, why did you go?
Because he didn't tell me. I was eating tea at the time.
Also, I was at the gig. I was show managing. I wasn't on stage.
Yeah, I could have still said hello.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I still would have said hello if you'd given me a bit of notice on it, but I was in the middle of tea by that point. How's your week been, Michelle?
Good. I had all the parent-teacher meetings, so that's all over and done with. So that's so good.
It's the last weekend before holidays, is it not?
Yes. 2 weeks starting this Friday. Well, actually, it's 2.5 weeks because we finish on Thursday and then we only go back on a Wednesday. So 2.5 weeks.
Mm, nice.
Very nice.
And the other big bit of Hunted-related news is the fact that Sade has been very much listening to our podcast and sharing it.
Yeah, that was great. Some clips came out last week. That was cool.
Certainly did. I think it was 5 in total. Anytime you tag us on your story, we will inevitably repost it.
No, of course.
Because I'm enough of a narcissist to go, oh, people are listening. I'm going to repost it. So it's an easy way to get our attention. So anyway, this episode. Previously, Beth was left all alone after Steve got caught, sobbing in Lulu's car. Sade and Cameron had sleeping bag races in the Peak District, while Kathy and Annada lived it up as Thelma and Louise in an open-top mini. Jackson and Nicola drew the hunters to Barry Island, while they closed in on Jack, unaware he had separated from Alex. Beth's time on the run ended, while the hunters realised about the split, and followed Jack's audacious plane ride over Hull.
Now, as soon as the first sequence was Jack, I was like, oh, here we go.
It was a very early capture for the episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had a little bit of hope for him, only because it was about 12 minutes into the episode, and I'm like, they're not going to do a capture this early. Not unless it's the double this episode.
But yet again, I think they've got a new editor.
Yeah, I think they have been listening to this podcast and are now deliberately misleading us. I joke about this a lot on Belgian Mole, that they listen to us and just do things to pander to us, but I think they are actually pandering to us here.
It's certainly different, but I got a strong sense he was getting captured as soon as we zoomed in on him at the beginning.
Yeah, especially when he was not going as far north as I anticipated. I will say, I think I said this last week, I hadn't looked at the description for this episode, and as soon as Alex went to Scotland, I'm like, I was almost spot on with that. Almost. Mm-hmm. One of them went to Scotland, I just picked the wrong one. But yeah, as soon as he landed in Newcastle, I'm like, oh God, here we go. He's probably not going to make it out alive here.
No.
Yeah. No.
But, you know, at least he had a nice, healthy breakfast of cup of tea and 5 sausage rolls before he got captured.
I wondered if I heard that wrong. Did he say A or 5? No. I'm like, no, he couldn't possibly say 5.
He said 5.
He stocked up on 5 sausage rolls.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, there are worse breakfasts to have.
But he also did not put enough money in that box for that chocolate bar. What was that? Was that a 10p? Like, seriously.
I think it was a pound coin.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks silver, though. Is your pound silver?
It's gold-rimmed. Silver middle, gold rims.
Right. I'll let him off then. Also, question for the English lads. How is a moor different from a field?
I don't know, because when they said moors, I was thinking like Yorkshire moors, which are just vast moors. But actually, these were just fields that were called moors. I don't know why that was the case.
I think it was just a naming thing in this case.
So moors are like giant fields.
Yeah, the Yorkshire moors are probably the most famous example is Anstey, and they're just miles of grassland.
Yeah,
that's where people get killed.
Hundreds of square miles of just desolate.
And death. People always get killed on the moors.
So according to Google, a moor is attractive, open, uncultivated upland, typically covered with heather.
But yeah, in this case, they were just like fields in a town.
Yeah,
because they had the Google Earth, and they just looked like bits of land. They didn't look like giant areas.
So we cut back to HQ finding out about the split. Daisy spots that he's landing at a skydiving place near Durham, half an hour from a team of ground hunters. And it is 4 days since he split off from Alex, apparently. Which, if we're believing them, puts this about day 5 or 6.
Yeah. We're at episode 4.
I know.
There is another bit of potentially worse monkeying with the timeline coming in this episode. But yeah, I don't think this is any later than like day 5 or 6.
It can't be. I'm sure, because I listened as well. I'm sure they split after about 24 hours. So, and if it's 4 days later, yeah, day 6.
I think it's last week that Jonathan Smith, the voiceover guy, said that they split after 24 hours.
Yeah.
So that would make it day 5. But we've seen people who got definitely caught later than that, i.e. Beth and Steve, and Jack's picture wasn't crossed out in the background of those. So there's some hinky business happening here, I think.
Deals.
And they say that Jack's a massive show-off, and that's going to come back to bite both of them. Which, I mean, they're not wrong.
Yep.
And HQ gets CCTV of the airfield office, but there's no CCTV of how he got away. And they find out pretty quickly by asking the receptionist nicely that he got a taxi into Newcastle.
Yep.
And he also seems to have got the driver to stop off at McDonald's on the way.
Well, it's been a while since he's had his 5 sausage rolls.
Like what? 5 minutes? 5 sausage rolls? How big are your sausage rolls there? Like the sausage roll we can get like at home, they're like mini. They're like the size of your palm. But if you get them at a petrol station, they're like the length of your hand. How?
Yeah, I think it's a how long is a piece of string situation, Michelle. Because if you get one from, I mean, he's in Newcastle, so it's likely it will have been Greg's he got it from, given that there are more Greg's than houses in Newcastle.
Well, he got it from the coffee stand, didn't he?
Yeah, no. I'm being facetious about the existence of Greg's in Newcastle.
But I think Greg's sausage roll should be the standard measurement against which all sausage rolls, you know, that should be like this. Yeah, a Greg's sausage roll is a sausage roll. If it's smaller than that, it's a mini sausage roll. If it's bigger than that, it's a jumbo sausage roll.
Yeah, I'd say a Greg's sausage roll is probably the length of your hand, if not a little bit smaller. But yeah, if you go to a proper bakery, you can probably get them a bit larger than that. But I don't think it would have been much larger than a Greg's sausage roll.
Maybe if he's listening, let us know.
Sausage roll?
Because it really helps us analyse the episode when we have the detail.
Yeah, we need all of the specifics. Give us the sausage roll size, please.
What coin exactly did you put in the box?
Yeah, don't lie to us. So he is dropped off at Gosporth near Newcastle, and he roams the moors around the city centre for the day before planning to leave the next day. JP and Mel then interrogate the skydive receptionist, who gives them the taxi company number. One of the HQ hunters then rings, pretending to be a friend, and gets the drop-off point location. I don't think we've been introduced to that HQ hunter. I have no idea who he is.
No, I couldn't place him. Nice little move, though, because that's what happened. You know, that's the sort of call they get all day, isn't it? You know, I've left my phone. Where did you drop him off? So before anybody moans, GDPR, you can't give out personal data. It's not personal data. You just said a person was dropped off in this place. Just cutting that one off before we get that.
And then we finally are actually introduced to Sade and Cameron, who are on a swing set in Peterborough.
Oh, wow. That's so cute.
I put in notes. Oh, hello, Sade and Cameron. Remember them?
Nice to meet you halfway into the series.
Yeah.
And he's a proud mummy's boy and her Achilles heel. And she had him at the age of 17 and only found out when she was 6 months pregnant, which is quite an achievement, I have to say. You'd hope she was showing by that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe she just had 5 sausage rolls.
Yeah, maybe. She had the sausage roll bloats. And they are going on the run to show his independence.
Oh, and boy, were there some very telling pieces of narrative here. This, for me, was like, ooh, interesting.
Even if I didn't know that Sade listened to last week's episode and was like, oh, am I actually going to get caught next week? I would want to apologise to Sade because, yeah, they're in a much stronger position than I thought they were going to be this time last week.
Yeah. And there were some very interesting bits of dialogue about, you know, Cameron needs to be more independent. He needs to take the lead. Even the phrase, he needs to show he can make it on his own.
Mm.
Ooh, that's not going to have no consequence. That something's going on there.
And I was trying to find my copy of last week's episode, and I don't think I had it on this laptop when I thought of this. But I don't think we saw the Cameron crying scene from that next time preview.
No, we did not.
Because that was my main hint that maybe they split off and Shadow gets caught or whatever, is because we saw Cameron, I think, in a tent crying. We didn't see that in this episode.
Mm-mm.
It was a misleading preview, not for the first time, but there was a scene in that preview that we haven't seen, I don't think. Unless it was the bus shelter.
Strange.
But I don't think he actually cried in the bus shelter. I think he was getting emotional, but I don't think he cried in the bus shelter.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. That is yet to come.
Interesting. And HQ haven't seen them all. Ray does one of his stupid metaphors, but at least he gets a little bit of pushback on it this time when he says, they're as quiet as a mouse pissing on cotton wool.
What is that? The whole place just looked at him.
Everyone's like, what was that, Raymonda? What now?
My favourite bit of it is you can see Doug dead centre in the back just giggling, laughing his head off at how ridiculous that metaphor was.
Because when is a mouse with cotton wool? Just that idea.
Yeah, Ray's sort of coy expression was almost the banner this week, but there is a better one, obviously, for our podcast that I'm going to use as a banner, I think, this week. We haven't got to that bit yet. So they are in Wakefield, where Sade wants to enlist a stranger to help them. He struggles to trust people and says he's a homebody as well, and he doesn't trust people in villages. He goes for a walk to snap himself out of his funk.
Mm-hmm. We get him some really nice emotional backstory here. This is good. I love the relationship as well. Sade seems like a really good mum. I like Sade a lot.
I mean, even if we didn't know that she listens to the podcast, we would be singing her praises.
Yeah, it was great. Some lovely scenes there.
He wants to prove that he's able to make his own decisions, and they reconcile after their brief fight, which is very sweet. Dr. Steve Hersey then goes back to Jack and triangulates the search area using the driver's mobile phone, and they've got no CCTV, and they presume correctly that that means that he's gone to a place without CCTV, like, you know, the moors that are right next to where he was dropped off. And he goes for a wee by the side of the road and sees the defender, and they stop at the coffee van where Jack had a cup of tea and get a positive ID. And he says he feels safe as he can see every angle from his location. Famous last words.
Yeah. Hunters have got no chance. Oh, no.
JP thinks that he sees him from a distance, and they park up, and he's got eyes on, and Jack runs away. He does the usual wonderful hunter trope of, stop running! Give up now! And Jack obviously just kind of holds his hands up and goes, yes, I'm getting caught. Oh, wait, no, he sits in a bush for 2 hours instead.
For 2 hours?
But why? Why was he sitting in the middle of the moor? Yes, he could see every direction, but the hunters can also see him. Like, what the hell?
And I think for the first time in hunted history, we actually have a situation where they saw the camera crew.
Yeah.
And that's what gave it away.
Yeah.
I think, actually, from a strategic point of view, it's not a terrible idea because, yes, you can see everything, but also, if it's the middle of summer as it is, this is June, we know that for a fact now, especially due to Kathy and Anna's scenes in this episode. It looked like quite a nice day, especially coming out of COVID. There was going to be a lot of people probably enjoying the moors and having picnics or whatever. He could blend in there. However, yeah, as Ant says, maybe they spotted the camera crew because he was at the top of the hill.
I know. And I feel like after all these years of us going, hey, if you're close enough to see the crew, you're close enough to catch them. Finally, at SeaWorld, we're like, oh, shit, you can see the camera crew and that's what's giving it away.
Yeah, I don't know.
It certainly looked like it.
Yeah, because he was wearing his GoPro as well.
Yeah.
And as we said a couple of weeks ago, if you're a fugitive and you're asked to wear a GoPro, maybe you think about your position a little bit.
Yes, maybe the hunters are close.
So Jack hides in a hedge, meters from the hunters, and it is a needle in a haystack for them. So an extra ground team, which is Paul and Kirsty, are sent out. And they check the bushes, and Jack's time on the run is over.
Bless him.
I don't think he was ever cut out to be a fugitive.
No, I don't think so. He was fun, though. We do like a fun fugitive. He gave it a good go. But yeah, hiding in a bush for 2 hours ultimately did not serve you well.
It was worth it just for JP's frustration that Jack ended up being quicker than him as well.
Yeah, how does that work?
Oh, he had a massive head start. I don't think he did.
Imagine if he'd not eaten 5 sausage rolls. He could still be out there.
Oh, exactly.
The sausage rolls are just slowing him down. And as we've also mentioned before, Lisa's edit has definitely softened because she was very magnanimous when chatting to him.
Yeah, and everything she's saying now, even when she's having a go, it's all with like a wry smile on her face now. I really like it. I think they've done a great job there.
She definitely had the don't be a dickhead chat, I think, between series 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think back to the celebrity series. She was a bit less arsey with the fugitives on that series, I think, as well. Maybe not Ed and James. But I think generally she was a lot nicer to those fugitives than she had been to the Series 6 ones.
She's being very nice.
Well, they did get a lot of complaints about how horrible she was, I think. So there was a lot of social media backlash of going, why did they replace the really nice Sherlock with her? So after 10 days, 7 remain on the run. Alex hasn't been seen since the Shepherd's Hut, and he's in Scotland playing poo sticks, which he hasn't done since he was a child.
Why has it got that name?
Named after Winnie the Pooh.
Thank you.
P-O-O-H rather than
thank you.
P-O-O.
Well, I was imagining many different things, trying to figure it out.
Especially when you're throwing a log into a river, yeah.
Well, that would be rather large, and that wouldn't float as well as the little ones, would it?
I will defer to your expertise there, Michelle.
Oh, my God. I'm thinking about, yes, large bits of wood.
Jackson and Nicola were last seen in Barry Island. They're in Wigan having Jackson's bag be pissed on by a pug. And HQ say if they don't catch them, they will be prized turkeys.
Cute.
What do we think of these two scenes back to back?
I think Jackson and Nicola are getting caught next week.
That was my feeling. If they don't, they win. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But I think they go. I think they go next week. And from as far as I can tell, Alex is getting the classic Nick Cummings. Don't forget, he's still around there, wandering through fields, and nobody's got a clue where he is.
Yeah, I mean, as a comparison to Nick, they are, by the end of this episode, still 70 miles behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is almost identical to the distance caption that we saw for Nick when he did his decoy. Kathy and Anada, I mean, we'll get to this at the end of the episode with their wonderful antics in this episode. I don't think they're as vulnerable as you maybe would think there.
No, they've got lots of lovely footage of them having fun.
Yeah.
But nothing to indicate they're anywhere near close to them.
No, I could see them being caught maybe towards the end. I do think they win, but I would probably put money on them not getting caught next week, even though they go to the Folkestone Regatta. So Kathy and Anada are a surprise. Mark would be professionally embarrassed if they don't get caught, which is a massive neon sign to say they ain't getting caught.
Mm-hmm.
They're going on the run for an adventure at their age, even though they're not actually that old, and they are filming a video, which is a parody news report. And they have a few tricks up their sleeve, as we do see in this episode. They film the video 1840 and are going to put it on social media. Charlie and Cameron have such a tight network around Nottingham that they're going to go local. They're still near Wakefield, and Cameron is taking charge and has a lemon sherbet to wake up. Another interesting breakfast choice in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Diet of Champions this week.
And he wants to head towards home and take a risk.
Why? Why?
I mean, you know the answer, really, but...
No, but do they have to, do you think? Because then we've got someone else going home. And then we've got someone else meeting family.
They don't have to go home, but they have to meet up with people who they know. And because yes. they're because as your favourite Dr. Donna says, their network is so concentrated around Nottingham that they've kind of got to head towards Nottingham to be able to fulfil that task.
Yes.
And they are hitching a ride to Nottingham, and someone in a car overhears her saying that they need to get home, please, and replies, get a job then.
Yeah. What is that about?
I don't want to stereotype, but she was an Audi driver.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fair.
A BMW driver is the one that picks them up and is very nice to them. However, I do have a particular hate boner for BMWs at the moment, given one nearly sideswiped me at 70 miles an hour last night.
Oh, okay. Yes.
He didn't look where he was going, and where he was going was into my front bumper.
Nice. Yes. If only they'd fit BMWs with indicators, that would help, wouldn't it? But, you know, they just refused to do it.
He was indicating.
Oh, okay.
He indicated as he was already halfway into my lane.
Nice.
Wasn't best pleased. May have said some non-Michelle-friendly words. So yeah, they get picked up in a BMW, and he doesn't let it go even when the lift is actually offered, which is my kind of person. Go on, Cameron. Hold that grudge. Let it motivate you. They're heading to Shadow's mum Lynn's house, but they know the hunters will look for them there, and the hunters are conveniently being sent to interview Lynn and her sister, Chanel.
And again, in a beautifully edited way to make it look like these things are happening at the same time.
Yeah, there's no way the hunters were anywhere near them at the time.
Not a chance.
They plot an escape plan using the entire family, including Cameron's card being used in Nottingham and her nephew and sister being decoys. Georgina and Zoe go to Chanel's house a mile away and stare through the window. Joshua, who is Sade's nephew, uses Cameron's card at the local Asda while wearing a mask. And HQ get the ping, and Lisa describes them as daft for doing it.
Which is just beautiful. It's lovely the way this unfolds.
I mean, I have no family members or friends. Like, if I was on the run with somebody, I wouldn't have two people who look so similar.
It was good. They couldn't have picked better people, could they? It was superb.
It's great.
It was delightful. They then investigate the ping, and Shadow and Cameron see them pull in from her dad's car. They investigate the park and see the decoys running. And my next note is just, bloody hell, Joshua can move like Cameron can.
Yes.
I know Cameron's been the one that's billed as a former professional sprinter and stuff, but Joshua can shift.
Yeah. It was just beautiful. It was so good.
Zoe then captures, quote unquote, Sade, and then realizes they've been hoodwinked when she takes the mask off. Mm-hmm. And Lisa takes it very personally.
I love the unmasking bit. I just wanted someone to say, we would have got away with it if it weren't for you meddling hunters.
Well, the best thing about this is they could only really do this when they were filming during COVID.
Yeah, because of the masks. Perfect.
Because the Nick decoy was the boiler suit and the wig and pretending to move like he did. But they could only do the face mask one when it's actually a common occurrence. And even in June 2022, it probably wasn't that common anymore.
No, it was starting to wear off, I think. I loved that. I absolutely loved this. This is one of the best scenes we've seen in a few series, I think.
And we also see that he gave them the finger on the CCTV at the ATM yes. when they got money out originally, which is such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's great. Just a little convincer there.
Alex is in the Scottish Borders camping. He says he's had a rough night's sleep, so he's heading to see his auntie who lives in a castle, because of course she does.
Of course she does. I mean, anyone whose great-great-grandfather's got a statue in Hyde Park obviously has family with castles. That's how it works.
I must admit, when I did read the description for this week's episode, and it's like, and one fugitive goes to see his auntie in a castle in Scotland, I'm like, oh, maybe my guess of Jack going to the Highlands is correct then. Nah, it's the other one. It's Alex. His great-grandfather was an explorer and has a statue in Hyde Park, and he's under the radar, but he signed up to get chased by the hunters. Flashback, of course, 3 weeks to Alex not even knowing the premise of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack is then brought into HQ, and they want to use him for a sting without his knowledge. So they send in bit of all right, Daisy, as another fugitive's associate.
I love this bit.
She's so good.
This made me laugh so much. I was like, oh, he
is so dumb.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago I said you can't really have Jordan hiding in plain sight because everyone knows him? It's literally this tactic. You send in Daisy because this is her first series, no one knows her, and she can just flirt up a storm with, let's be honest, a horny guy in his 20s who finds her incredibly attractive.
It was just like, oh my god.
He was not thinking with his brain.
No.
And it just makes this scene even better, I'll be honest. The fact that Daisy knows exactly what she's doing here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, stop talking.
And it's capped off by the fact that he invites her out for a drink.
Of course he does.
Oh, my skin crawled. I'd love to know Daisy's reaction to that entire conversation, I'll be honest. It really made me laugh. And there's one moment before he gets brought in where she's just acting all innocent, knowing the hidden cameras are there, just like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. This is going to be hilarious fun. That is Albana.
Yeah, I love it. What a great tactic. And oh my god, Jack.
I couldn't resist making Bit of All Right Daisy the banner this week, just for her her services to entertainment. So Jack does reveal that Alex has a family connection in Scotland, and therefore JP and Mel are sent up there to investigate.
It's going to be so ironic if Alex does get caught, and it's because of Jack.
Yeah, it's because Jack is a horny, horny man.
Maybe sausage rolls are aphrodisiacs.
Yeah, maybe. So then we go back to the wondrous Kathy and Anada, and it actually begins with Doug not knowing how to use volume. Doug has kind of been a little bit more antagonistic than he normally is this series, I've noticed.
I'm liking that he's a little bit more prominent. He's obviously rising through the ranks from his seniority, having been there from the start.
I mean, obviously, we get to the ranking their set design, costumes, and acting ability. But there have been little comments peppered in of Doug, A, getting more airtime, which is obviously brilliant for us because we love talking about Doug, and Doug's a lovely human being. But also, he's been a little bit more sassy than normal this series.
I like it.
So Kathy and Anna's video gets played. Doug ranks them set design 2 out of 10, costumes 1 out of 10, acting ability negative, but Dr. Donna, being the nice person she is, gives them points for effort.
I know, where does that come from? Like, seriously, in a past series, she'd be calling them a name there, not points for effort.
Dr. Donna was never mean in previous series.
Oh, no, not Dr. Donna. Sorry, I was meaning the chief.
Lisa would have called them names, absolutely. Dr. Donna's all, like, flowery and nice about everyone.
Yes.
And broadly respectful, even though Michelle hates her.
I don't hate her.
Anymore. You used to really hate her.
I don't hate anybody.
You used to really hate her, Michelle.
I disliked her takes on people.
Stop rewriting history. We know the truth.
Oh, I never hate. Stop it.
And Kathy and Anada are even more trolling by tagging the video in Brighton.
Yeah.
And Mark asks whether they need a passport to leave East Sussex, which is something I said last week.
Well, hey, it's worked so far.
Yeah. I think at this point, assuming that they're telling the truth about it being like day 10, 11, I think at this point they have moved the least out of any fugitive in history.
Must be, yeah.
I would say so. But I mean, why move if you can't be found anyway?
They're within 50 miles of the start point still.
Yeah, they're under 2 hours away from where they started.
And now we get to the really fun bit that I want to talk about, because they end up in Bexhill-on-Sea.
Yay!
Michelle.
Yay!
You know Bexhill very well, I know.
I do.
It's where your brother lives, is it not?
Yes, it's so exciting. They walk down where I walk down.
Yeah, it is also where my grandfather lives.
Oh, wow.
I was there in January.
I love it.
So I know Bexhill very well as well, which is even funnier. And I sent Doug a message last night from the podcast account saying, yeah, Bexhill's going to be fun to talk about.
Yes. It was cool. I loved them being there.
It also made me laugh that their first reaction was, they'll fit in well because it's full of old people, which is definitely a reputation Bexhill has.
Oh, does it? I don't know. I saw sort of all walks of life when I was there, but I was there in winter time, holiday sort of time, so it could have had a lot of holiday people there too.
Bexhill is very much the retirement village of East Sussex.
Ah.
And they also find out, because it's June, that Speedos still exist.
Did I miss something? What do you mean? What did they see?
They saw a man sunbathing in Speedos.
Oh, okay. Down
when they were walking.
Yeah, yeah.
And every day that they remain on the hunt, they get prouder. It's going to get harder, though, they say.
Well, you know, in Speedos, it's very obvious if it gets harder.
Appropriately wow. low-hanging fruit there, Ant.
Wow. I suppose you get more anxiety towards the end, don't you?
And they're meeting with Anada's friend Graham from her time as a competitive rower, staying with his partner Gay. And he's kept a stash of disguises for them, which are definitely not going to come in handy.
No, definitely not.
I thought you were going to make the netting over her head, the banner. Like, what was that?
If Kathy and Anada hadn't had two in a row, they would have been a very strong contender for this week's banner, just because every time we cut to them, they're doing something insane.
I know. I love them. I want to go out with them. We'll go out for a drink with them. That would just be insane.
And in fact, we did get tagged this morning by Chris, who listens to the podcast, in Kathy and Anada's latest post going, oh, you should do a deep dive with RTV Warriors.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh my God, can we?
They haven't got back to us yet, but you know.
I think they're up for it.
I'm putting it out there. Oh. We would very much be up for that.
That's crazy. That would be okay, that would be really hard to manage, but good.
Yeah, it'd be absolute chaos, but I think we'd have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, definitely. And it was another one of those points in the show where I could literally feel people already moaning about, huh, look at that. They just happen to stumble across the rowing connection at the same time as they're there. Yeah, that's called editing. They might have found this connection at any point. They've just put that scene next to that scene so that the viewers can see that they relate to each other. So it's nice and easy.
You may have noticed that no one in HQ changes their clothes, and that's because it's a thing called continuity.
Oh my God. Do you understand how much I have to address that in the Australian group?
I know. Why do people get so hung up on it in the Australian one?
It's a thing. It is a major thing each season. So much so that people now make posts joking about it, but pretending to be serious, and it gets all the other people up in arms. And then I'm like, okay, we can't even joke about this because people are serious about this crap.
The best thing about it, though, Michelle, is the fact that they take umbrage with this sort of stuff, and they're not the absolute blatant monkeying with the timeline that happens in Australian Hunted. Australian Hunted is far worse for dicking around with the timeline than British has ever been, even in Series 1.
They just want to talk about the clothes. That's all they want to talk about.
But yeah, Daisy finding the Coast Amateur Rowing Association could have been day 2 or 3. In fact, it very likely was.
Yeah.
But it's not relevant until they're actually staying with Graham and the link happens on the episode.
Absolutely. In the same way that Daisy might have found 15 other connections to other groups of people who they never go and meet, therefore they will never make it to air.
Yeah. Appropriately for what happened last week in terms of anniversaries for me and you, Ant, this is very much a Chekhov's gun principle. If we see it on the episode, it will become relevant.
Yes.
And I'm obviously alluding to the fact that the 4th of April, which was last Thursday, was the 7-year anniversary of me and Ant doing The Code. And that means that probably this week is the 7-year anniversary of one of my favourite gifts in the world, which is Michelle saying, oh, no way! Which I do, you'll be pleased to know, still very much use in work chats to this day.
Very good.
7 years since it's aired, which means it's 7 years since anybody heard of the show.
It is.
I've never met anybody who watched that show.
It's 7 years since you could see the disappointment on my face at finding out we were playing for $3,500 instead of like 12.
Yeah.
Why did you play for less?
Because I think it was a guy two or three before us won the jackpot, and then the jackpot resets. Must have been two before us because it resets to $3,000. So yeah, if we were probably one filming day earlier, we would have been playing for $11,000-$12,000 between us instead of $3,500. I mean, we still would have lost. So it's
It would have just been an even bigger disappointment when we lost. So you know.
I would have had more PTSD from that. But it's beside the point. So their life is Sussex and the southeast coast, and HQ take a punt on them going to one of the regattas that either Eastbourne on the 18th of June or Folkestone on the 19th of June, which, according to what me and Stephen Wensley have figured out, is roughly days 9 or 10.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out.
How many days are they on the run again for this 21. Season? 21, and they're only at 9 or 10, and we've finished episode 4? What are they doing with episode 5 and 6? Are they going to shove everything in so quickly? Like, wait a minute. Did you just say that Alex is on day 5?
Jack was, yeah. Jack was on about day 5 or 6.
So in this episode, we've got Jack on day 5. Kathy and Anna are on day 9, possibly. Yeah. And it's a 21-day season and we have 2 episodes left. What the hell?
Yes. From previous experience, there will have probably been at least one scene in this episode that was from like day 15 or 16. And it's just a reminder that these people exist. If I had to guess, it's probably going to have been Alex.
Yeah, because all of his shots are him just wandering around fields. So they could be any day, couldn't they?
The whole connection to Scotland and the scene of Jack getting enamored by Daisy, that was a day or two after he got caught, because presumably they had to drive him from Newcastle. So that was maybe day 6 or 7 that Jack was being entrapped by Daisy. If they then didn't act upon that until day 8 or 9, then it sort of marries up with the timeline. Because I think at one point we find out that it's been about a week since Jack and Alex have seen each other.
Wow.
But it does beg the question, what are they doing with episodes 5 and 6? So my theory is, I think all of the captures they get in this series all happen in a short time space. They're quite early, and then there's nothing.
Yeah, I think the start date maybe is a day or two out as well. I think there is a potential chance that the regattas were on day 11 or 12.
Yeah, it's there or thereabouts, though. It's certainly no later than that.
It's certainly very much in the second week, maybe at a push at the start of the third week.
Mm.
But it's certainly not where it should be in the timeline if it's done chronologically. So yeah, it's likely that a lot of the captures are very early on, and then there is the less interesting bits of the hunt that will get cut out and will skip to like day 16, 17 by the end of the next episode.
Mm.
It's certainly not out of the question historically for them to do like the last 4 days of the hunt in the last episode.
No, that's right.
So they dress as nuns and run around the garden the next morning, and they're going to the Folkestone Regatta on the 19th.
I love how they just dress as nuns just for fun in the backyard. Like, they don't even need to go out like that.
My father was a nun.
Sorry?
When they brought him in front of the judge and asked for his occupation, he said nun.
Oh, Jesus. I can't take credit for that one. That's an old one. Anthony, do you even do that joke?
No.
No, Anne does jokes about Grindr.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, God.
The other bit of the message that I sent to Doug as well is that it's very interesting they went to the Folkestone Regatta as well, because I have a lot of friends in Folkestone. And in fact, I was in Folkestone twice the year that this was filmed. Yeah, when we have a lot of Folkestone scenes next week, I will probably know where everything is, because I've looked where the Folkestone Rowing Club is, where they have the regatta, and it is round the corner from the hotel I always stay at. I have very much walked past it. So the hunters are sent in disguise, and Doug thinks that they're stupid enough to fall for it. Hunters Ashley and Daisy then figure out the family connection, that Alex's aunt, Rosalind, has a castle in Scotland, and that his great-grandfather was a hunter. He forgets his bag in the car that drops him off at the castle. He has a delightful lunch and already identifies an exit for if a Land Rover appears.
How beautiful is her name, considering it's so apt for being in a castle?
What, Rosalind?
Rosalind, in a castle with a Land Rover. It's very.
There's no Tracys living in castles.
No, there's no Tracy.
Rosalind seems like a nightmare to me.
Rosalind can't lie to save her life. Rosalind is so bad. What was it? She said, has he been here? Oh, it's been quite some time since I've seen him. Literally 15 seconds later, he could have been here. And with a smile, I don't understand people like this. I really don't get them. I couldn't be friends with someone like that.
I will say she does have a wonderful voice. I was very much a fan of her voice.
She's delightful.
Very great voice for Rosalind.
She can also jump quite far for a woman of her age. The JP and Mel are sent to Thirlsdane Castle to interrogate Rosalind, and JP has the bright idea to buy her a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah, sure.
What were they? I
mean, she lives in a castle. She's going to be very impressed by your supermarket flowers, JP. Oh,
wow. My favourite thing about this is the fact that she opens the door and JP and Mel are there with the bouquet of flowers, and I think it's Mel says, we got you some flowers for you helping us out. And she went, well, I didn't help you out. No. I've not helped you.
If it was me, I would say, who says I'm going to help you? I will not be helping you. Please leave. Bye. Take your flowers.
And then you'll shut one of the many doors on Pierce Denovan Castle.
Oh, I would love to shut a door in the hunters' faces.
Mark says Alex is capable, and without Jack holding him back, he's more of a danger, so they need to catch him quickly. And he spends the night and prepares to leave in camp for 2 days. Rosalind gives him sausages for dinner, and his plan is to head back across the border to Carlisle.
And I think the fact that the most exciting thing we're seeing is, I left my bag in a car for 10 seconds and put me some sausages in for my tea. He's probably quite telling.
Yeah. And also, just reading that out and thinking back to our conversation about the timeline, there's at least 2 days between him leaving the castle in Carlisle. They've established that, which at minimum puts this as about day 12 or 13.
Oh my gosh, seriously?
Yeah. Because we find out when he's about to go to Rosalind's mansion that it's a week since he's seen Jack, which marries up with the timeline of Jack coming down to HQ and it being a day or two after he got caught in Newcastle, although he's still wearing the same clothes, which is interesting. And then there's another couple of days after he leaves the castle before he gets to Carlisle, because we see him skipping through the fields of Carlisle or whatever it is at the end of the episode. So he's probably on about day 12 or 13. He seemingly is the furthest through the hunt that we've seen anyone be so far. I wouldn't be surprised if Shadow and Cameron are on about day 12 or 13 in their scene as well.
Yeah, they could well be. We haven't got a clue, have we? We know they've been here, there and everywhere, though, so that's going to have taken time.
Because they were hanging around the Peak District for the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
They started this episode in Wakefield and then went to Nottingham and now are escaping in Sade's dad's car.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they're sort of midway through the hunt here as well and we just haven't needed to see anything of them until this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, this is probably the latest in the series they can quote-unquote introduce anyone and still have them win.
Yeah.
They couldn't really do it for episode 4. It's not the original series anymore. So the hunters are in Eastbourne for the regatta, but it doesn't look like it's on, and they are there too late. But Folkestone is the next day.
This is my question here. Is it really the next week? Is that why it's not on?
Well, it's the next day.
Yeah, it was the day before. It's 18th and 19th, yeah. Wasn't it? But if you're supposed to be going to a regatta to potentially look for some fugitives, would you not bother to check what time it was on?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's a bit weird, isn't it? We were too late. It's already finished. Oh, you didn't think to check?
I know the next bit is that HQ considered them low-hanging fruit, so they put them on the back burner. But there is underestimating them, and there is underestimating them so much you couldn't be asked to find out what time the regatta was on that you suspect they're going to be at. Stupid.
Stupid!
Ray says they were always considered low-hanging fruits and never got enough attention. Graham's car is seen heading towards Folkestone, and it's being driven by Cathy and Anada, and stops at a campsite near Canterbury, which is about 20 miles from Folkestone, if that. And they wear a disguise to get supplies from the local Premier stores for the evening, including, obviously, bottles of wine.
Of course, essential supplies.
I feel like a red, she says.
Yeah, I also like the fact that obviously they're on a limited budget, but they bought Casiero del Diablo, which is not a cheap wine.
No, if you're going to go on the run, you need decent wine. Come on.
I don't understand.
When that's on offer in Asda and Tesco, it's like £8. I only know because my parents drink it. They've probably paid about 12 or 13 quid for that bottle of wine.
Yeah, because they're at like an express type store. They're always dead expensive.
How do they have money? Like, I would rather buy, you know, one of those stores, because we used to get dinner on the way home when we were over there, and we used to get like a Caesar salad or a lasagna in a packet, or like you'd get the Caesar salad over the red wine, wouldn't you? Instead of the ravioli in a can. Obviously, their priorities are different from mine. Obviously, don't need any sustenance. They just need wine.
Yeah, I don't hate it because the cans will keep a lot longer. So if you're getting supplies for knowing you're going to be camping for a few days in advance, you get the cans rather than a Caesar salad because the salad will go off.
Correct. But they did get the can with the red wine at the same time.
Yeah, I know they did.
Yes.
In terms of strategy, they may have bought like four cans. They probably bought a pack of four cans or something.
Hmm.
It's not as stupid as it seems.
I'm on board with their priorities. I'm totally endorsing their choices. Good wine. Crap food. No problem with that at all.
But I'd rather have a can of baked beans than ravioli. Ravioli? What's that going to taste like?
It's all right. I've had canned rent. It's fine. It's okay. Yeah, it's all right.
If you're going to go canned food, eating it out of a can, it's rice pudding for me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What? No.
I am a fan of room temperature rice pudding. I will die on this hill.
Yeah.
Oh, that's disgusting.
No, I'm with you there. You can have that.
That's disgusting.
My family think it's revolting, but no, it's nice.
It is revolting. What about a can of custard? Custard's better than that.
Nah, you don't eat custard out of a can.
Oh, I could do that as well.
I like custard out of anything. I like custard. But rice pudding? Listen to this conversation. Oh, it's
I don't know if I'm giving too much away here, but if I was on the run, eating would not be an issue. I will eat literally anything.
Finding bottles of wine, however.
Now we're talking. See, this is a lesson I learned in life, right? So I always thought I didn't like red wine. And what I discovered in my 40s when I actually could afford proper wine is, no, I don't have a problem with red wine. I have a problem with cheap wine. So I'm on board, fully on board with this. You have made the right life choices.
See, I wouldn't have any wine. I don't like wine at all, unless it's sweet wine. But then I would eat food over drinking wine.
What would be your tipple of choice on the run then, Michelle?
Well, I wouldn't drink Fanta. That would be my drink that gives me sugar. And because when I've had a big day at work, right, and the kids have been like carrying on and not generally being normal, and these are kindergarten kids, and then most teachers will say, God, I need a drink. And I'm like, I need a Fanta. I need a Fanta right now to give me the sugar hit.
The big question, Michelle, orange, lemon or pineapple?
Orange.
Correct answer.
Orange. Yeah.
Orange. Definitely. Fanta. Red Fanta's all right though.
Oh no, it tastes like cherry. It's awful.
Yeah, I was going to say it's red cherry.
Well, sometimes it's raspberry.
Yeah, it's some sort of tropical mix, I think.
Yes.
Because pineapple is just the rebranded Lilt.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you have Lilt in, or had Lilt in Australia, Michelle, but totally tropical.
Well, it's, yeah. We don't have Lilt, but yeah. But seriously. Oh, God. Yeah, I wouldn't have any alcohol on the run. I just probably want to have a cup of teas and Fanta and maybe a juice, because I don't really drink water. Only, like, if I'm really thirsty.
There'd also be the risk that if you overindulged when drinking of an evening on the run, you might have a sore head in the morning.
And you can't run.
Yeah. You don't want to be waking up camping with a sore head, then going, I'm going to go meet some people I maybe know at a regatta.
This is what we need to ask Kathy and Anita. Did you ever wake up with a sore head on the run? Or are you seasoned professional drinkers and one bottle shared between two does nothing to you?
What is your Casiero tolerance? That's what we need to know. So Lisa says when they're hunting people, they're looking for something out of the norm, and it's suspicious that Graham's car stopped 30 minutes from Folkestone, so they're going to have to investigate. In Louder, JP and Mel pull up at the castle, and Rosalind is inherently suspicious. She stonewalls them initially, but breaks after about two questions, says, oh, bother, and then threatens to let their tyres down.
She's lovely. What a delight.
Even though she's obviously useless as an accomplice, I really like Rosalind. I think she's very charming.
Yeah, she's great.
And Alex says she can always trust a compass, and he's in Carlisle, 70 miles away. And he gets his winning confessional of wanting to prove that he can beat the hunters.
Yay.
Kathy and Anada are preparing to head to the regatta to find some new contacts, and Ray promises them cigars and croissants if they're caught. I don't think we've had a cigars and croissants mention in Hunted, because it was always a thing from the heist.
Ah, that's where it was. I knew it sounded familiar.
Yeah, because Ray obviously came from the heist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Keely, I want to say, was the detective's name. The little obnoxious woman. Cigars and croissants. All that sort of stuff.
Do they really go together?
Don't ask me.
Like, cigars are really pungent. Wouldn't you think they would take over all your taste buds?
Also, as we've previously established, if you're going to buy some celebratory food, you don't make it croissants. You make it like cake.
You don't have cigars either.
Yeah, lose the cigars. Replace the cigars with cake. Cake
and
croissants.
And Fanta.
Cake, croissants,
or,
and Fanta.
Or expensive red wine.
Or good red wine.
Yeah, replace the cigars with cake, and replace the croissants with cake, and then I'm there.
Yeah.
And one sausage roll, not five.
One sausage roll.
From Greg's.
And can we have someone playing the recorder?
I think we've established as the standard unit measurement of sausage rolls now.
And we need someone playing the recorder for us while we're eating all this stuff.
We will not accept a sausage roll that is more than 23% pork.
Oh, no, no, no.
I can't. I just can't.
What we need to do is arrange a picnic with us, Kathy and Adida, where we're all dressed as nuns, drinking red wine, eating sausage rolls and croissants.
With a cigar wafting in the background.
So HQ take Kathy and Adida's continued success personally. It's time to make them dimwits and idiots.
Well, that's not going to come back and bite them at all, is it?
Nope. Next time, Kathy and Anada stick out like a sore thumb and spot hunters in Folkestone. Jackson and Nicola bait the hunters, and Alex heads towards his dad's house, but finds hunters in wait.
And also, I have an issue here. You can't just jump into next time without telling you it's next time. Can we have a proper next time, please? Because it freaked me out. I didn't know where we were.
Yeah, I did think something was missing, because we didn't have Jonathan Smith say, next time.
No, and it just went from them following Kathy and Anada to then a shot that's from next week of Kathy and Anada, and then it went to other random stuff, and I was like, oh, we're doing next time, thanks. Thanks, hunters.
Here's the thing I will say about the Folkestone Regatta. Folkestone is very busy in the summer at the best of times. I've only been sort of winter and autumn, really, but it's absolutely heaving in the summer. They will be able to blend in, even with terrible wigs like they are wearing. That's my prediction. I don't think Kathy and Anada are going to get caught in Folkestone.
I don't either. No, I think they're fine.
We've got a lot of people still on the run.
Well, seven with potentially, 11 days left?
Yeah.
I think Jackson and Nicola are the most vulnerable next week, being honest.
Yeah, I agree.
It certainly looked like they were being chased through a warehouse of some description.
Yeah, and I would say that based on we've had all of their backstory, and this week what we didn't have was how wonderful a time they're having, and now everything's great. Mm. So I think they're gone next week.
And also they could still be very much in the first week or so, because we've not seen Jackson have to do another testosterone shot yet.
That's true.
Anything else you want to say?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
No, I need to go and get 5 sausage rolls now. And some good red wine.
I'd vomit. I can't eat 5.
We really need to get some sponsors for this podcast. I want boxes of sausage rolls sent to my house. I mean, I would say you can keep the red wine, but no, I'll have the red wine because it's my dad's birthday on Saturday and I'll give it to him. Oh, saves me buying more bottles for him. But yeah, sausage rolls definitely. I prefer a steak bake if I'm going to Greg's, but sausage rolls I'll accept if they're nice ones. Red wine, will happily take any donations, and when Ant bothers to actually tell me whether he's up north next, he can share the load.
You know what I need? I always need another costume or something. We need a costume shop sponsor. That would do well too.
So our shopping list here in terms of sponsors is I'll have sausage rolls, Ant will have red wine, and Michelle will have a nun costume. Perfect. So thank you for listening to our Hunted Recap. We'll be back this time next week for another episode. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram where we're RTV Warriors, or you can email us and contact at rtvwarriors.com. Anthony's on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Bullsboy. Michelle is Bear 333333333, and I'm MJ Harmstone. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rtvwarriors. We will see you next Tuesday for episode 5, but with that, for this week, your time in the run is over.
Bye.
Bye.